So after that, I went to the army because we were forced to go to the, serve to the Russian army. In the army, I was served in special forces. It's called this Airborne Landing. I have a tattoo on my right hand, in the middle parachute, and from both sides the planes. This is a special sign from Russian special forces. In the morning, wake up in the morning, 6 o'clock, and running for maybe 10 kilometers. A lot of fightings, a lot of trainings, and then jumps with the parachute from the planes. Very, very roughly it was a military service, because very cruel service, because old soldiers teach young soldiers without any mercy and so on. So what happened after army, I started to work at the police, at the border police, and then so happened in neighborhood is was lived one young lady. Maybe it looks funny. So she left to the island, and so I decided to go to this country because I felt that I fell in love with her. And then I came to Derry City.
Coming inside, seated in a screen van.
It was difficult at the beginning because I was a stranger.
Start an engine.
The people not accept me as a
man
because I'm not I wasn't local.
Switched on two buttons. For the preparation of ice cream mix.
So in the beginning, I'm telling you straight, it was seriously difficult.
And now ice cream is preparing. It takes approximately 5-6 minutes. And then
I was tough. I was a hardened man. So I made my the best. And since that time, I'm valued in everywhere in the streets, wherever I go. Every people loves me.
Same again.
You know, I came out quite early on to my parents because they actually.
Age?
I was around 10 years old, and my parents found me. Actually, well, my mother, she found me cross dressing. I'd actually was dressing in my sister's clothes and found in the bedroom. And, you know, she just like opened the door, oh my God, and went out again, you know.
So even at 10 years old, you had that strong sense of,
well,
I am a woman.
Yeah, I did, but between. It was 6 or 7 years old. I was actually trying to cut body parts off me. I was in the bath and nail clippers and trying to, you know, remove things. It was like a piece of cotton on the end of your clothing. It just didn't belong there, so pull it off, you know.
And how did your family deal with it?
Badly. Albeit now they're fantastic, but at the time it was. I'd almost gone through a process of being humiliated. My mother had found me. She said, come on down, and you want to be a girl then? Go up and choose a dress, and which I did, and got dressed, and I thought, yeah, I'm in my element here. Mm-hmm. You know, it was that easy. And they proceeded to do my hair. My sister's done my makeup and everything. And then it was like, come on now, we're off around town. So then I was taken around every single shop. This is my son that wants to be a girl, and just a complete humiliation, which for me pushed me back in the closet. So, you know, I didn't come back out then till maybe 17 or 18 years of age.
Well, then my husband, he was chittering away, and I don't know what he's chittering about, but maybe one of his horses had lost or something,
yeah.
That I don't know, but I got fed up listening to him.
Yeah.
Well, that was the first time I got a steam iron.
Oh.
Well, I didn't know what a steam iron was.
Right.
So he went down into the coal hole to get something, and he kept on chittering, and I stuck the steam iron. I had got him a pair of them nylon trousers when they came out first.
Yes.
And when I stuck the steam iron onto his backside, he jumped.
I should think you would, yes. The sort of thing you would do. Yeah.
So the next...
a hot iron on his backside.
Well, you could see the steam coming out of it then.
I should think so.
So he says to me the next morning, see if I got the hair to you last night and I wrung your flaming neck. I says, wait, what happened? He says, when I went to change out of my day clothes, he says, into my white clothes, he says, them nylon trousers, he says, were stuck to my backside. And I says, you're telling lies. So he says to me, I said, let us see. So the next thing is, he let me see, and
yes.
There there was the marks of where the steam comes in. Another wee look.
Yes, the holes.
He says to me, what have you got? Anybody else would hit you, you know. But he says to me, he says, what are you going to say about it? I says, well, the only thing that I can say is that if you ever go, it was a time of troubles. I said, if you ever go down the city centre, I said, a bomb goes off and they blow the head off you. I said, she identify you. Or and I'll be able to identify you.
That's love.
Well, you know, he never won. I didn't do it the second time. But we had a good marriage.
Yes, you're right. He didn't turn a word in your mouth.
He never said, any other man would have whacked you or something.
Oh, God bless him.
But it must have been sore.
Ach, it must have been, yeah. God love you. Well, you feel sorry for him now?
Well, let's put it this way. I didn't kiss him to get it better.
And within the last half hour, the police have confirmed a second security alert in nearby Brigade. Well, first in Elson Drive, our reporter Anna Quigley is there this afternoon. Good afternoon, Anna.
Good afternoon, Amanda. Yes, two cordons are currently in place and Trafalgar Court has essentially been boxed off this lunchtime. Police officers are redirecting traffic away from Broomhill Avenue. Now, that's just off the Limavady Road, and the same is happening at the cordon here on Sperrin Park where I'm currently standing. Now, I'm looking at the back of the houses which have been evacuated. To my left, there are five terraced houses. Residents in those homes were asked to leave earlier this morning, and on the right, I'm number of properties where it's understood the object was discovered in the front garden. Residents there have also been asked to leave. Now, immediately to my right is a supported living facility which is home to 18 residents, some with disabilities. I spoke to staff there earlier who say they're currently unaffected, but they do have a contingency plan in place should this alert continue and they are asked to leave. They are hoping, of course, that won't be the case. Call Community Centre, which is just yards behind me, has been open for anyone who've been asked to leave their homes, but it seems people have opted to go to friends and families. With me now is DUP councillor for the area, Drew Thompson. Councillor Thompson, what more do you know?
Not a lot other than I've been told by the PSNI that it is a suspect pipe bomb that has been left in the garden of a home in Trafalgar Court.
I discovered Joni's music when I was about 19, 20 years old, living in London. Somebody gave me a copy of Blue. When I heard her singing and the way that she put words together, it just moved me so deeply in terms of singing about a song like A Case of You or Blue, the song itself, the title track, A Little Green, any of those kinds of songs. I just was really knocked out by them.
Just before our love got lost, you said, I am as constant as a northern star. And I said, constantly in the darkness, where's that at? If you want me, I'll be in the bar.
Because by the time I got to songwriting, you know, every chord progression had been put together, everything sounded the same, and I didn't realise that you could change the tuning of a guitar until somebody said, oh, you know, Joni Mitchell makes up her own tunings. One of the most common ones that she used is called Open D, but it's got an F sharp in it as opposed to a G. So if you're going down the guitar, it's D, A, D, F sharp, A, D for all the guitar players out there. And it just opened up literally. It was like finding a key for a secret door, and it opened up this new world for me musically. And I started, even on my very first album, there's a song like Hollow or Believe It or Open Arms. They're all written in that tune, and that's Joni's tuning. And I continued to do it right the way through to Christopher Street. Even something like Carrick Fergus, which I did a traditional arrangement of, is that tuning. That's where I came up with that whole tuning. So she absolutely, you know, unwittingly, completely unearthed a whole series of places for me to go musically.
Christopher Street was busy tonight.
And how were you able to cover your tracks, stealing that amount of money, gambling at that type of rate, and still being able to do it?
Yeah, I suppose whenever you're an accountant and people trust you, even they were getting letters in to say that things wasn't paid, the first person they phoned was me, and I was able to tell them a lie. And until the end of it, where I was caught red-handed, where a client actually came in and reached me a cheque, a copy of a cheque, and says, what's going on here? I think it was four cheques totaling 60 or 80 grand or something in them regions, and they were made out to me rather than HMRC.
How were you able to lie in your bed at night?
You weren't.
Knowing that what you were doing was causing so much misery in so many other lives.
You weren't. That was the big one for me. I would say for 5 years I never slept. I spent it drinking and gambling. And that was just an outward sign of how much turmoil my insides was in, you know. That was the only way I could get peace from it, was actually be gambling. Whenever you were gambling, you didn't have to think about it. And gambling was the way out, which is crazy. in hindsight, but it's the only way I could get any peace. You know, it's very, very hard to look at family whenever you're doing things like that. And my way was, I just moved away. I just isolated myself. Even with a wife, like I ruined a relationship with a wife that I never would have done if I hadn't been gambling.
We're sitting now in your cell and you've had an awful long time to think about what you've done in life. You've already served a year and you have 6 months ahead of you before you get released again. As you lie in your bed here in this cell, do you ever think of those people that you took money from?
Absolutely. I don't think that's anything that'll ever escape my attention, you know, and at some stage, I'll get a chance to put it right with them.
I thought many a night, would they tell my son, you know, that his father had that problem? I was scared to tell my son in case maybe he ended up the same way, you know, and I'm scared in case the son takes after the father, and it was just hard, but I eventually told him. My husband left him a letter, you see. I opened it and read it, but I never told my son that it was here until last week. But it's hard, you know, because I miss my husband, you know, but I'm still quite angry, you know, the way everything's left. And I'm sorry, excuse me.
And you have the letter here now, and you want to raise awareness here. You want to let people know how serious of an issue this is. How much debt was your husband actually in?
All in all, my husband left me debt of £22,000. And I have the wee letter here that I read to my son. Darling, I know I broke your heart, but I was in a bad place. I'm sorry. And I know you'll keep our boy on the straight path. God. That's what I have left out of this mess, and no husband.
Incredible Woodburning Savages. We are live at the Playhouse Theatre, and the Woodburning Savages are in one corner. All the bands are lined along one wall, and I'm going to gather everybody around me here, and we're going to walk down to the far end of the room because we have another wonderful performance ahead from the magnificent Gaze Is Ghost. Give it up for Gaze Is Ghost.
Many years ago, we drove back by the coast and stopped in your car. You pounded out three stars. That's Orion's Belt.
Now, a 6-foot sculpture of a Celtic sea god costing over £10,000 has been stolen from Benevna Mountain. Mana Mac Lear, which is made out of fibreglass and stainless steel, was taken from the viewing point on the mountain overlooking Limavady and Loch Foyle. Our reporter Dean McLaughlin has been to the mountaintop.
It's an absolute disgrace, Dean, that somebody would want to lift a statue that's been there. Nobody never bothered with it, and now it's gone missing. Who would want that statue? And what good is it to anybody? I've seen it with my children. They loved it. And now it's gone. Get a life. Who wants to lift a statue from a mountain? I do believe that somebody has came and visited the area and seen this statue and maybe has took it for their garden as an ornament.
Well, there's still a lot of snow here on the mountain. A lot of slush. A lot of muck, and it's very slippy, but this is such a well-known place. This is the viewing point on Benevna Mountain. It looks over Benone Beach, McGilligan, towards Limavady. You can even see Donegal from here. And as I make my way towards the statue at the top of this hill, yes, the statue is completely gone. All that's left is the boat where the statue stood inside with its arms open wide, looking over the water, looking over this land that is absolutely stunning here today with the sun shining. This statue, some local people would say, is what controls the behaviour of the sea.
Straight ahead, the four funnels and three masts of a steamer, with a course at right angles to ours. Ship is made out to be a large passenger liner.
100 years ago this Thursday, just off the coast of Cork, German U-boat captain Walter Schwieger took aim at the Lusitania. She was sailing from New York to Liverpool. 1,300 passengers and 700 crew were on board. The massive torpedo launched from the tube and sped through the water. Captain Schwieger recorded what happened next.
Foot struck starboard side, close behind the bridge. An extraordinarily heavy detonation followed, with a very large cloud of smoke. A second explosion must have followed that of the torpedo. Boiler or coal or powder. The ship stopped immediately and quickly listed sharply to starboard, sinking deeper by the head at the same time. It appeared as if it would capsize in a short time. Several boats loaded with people rushed downward, struck the water bow or stern first and filled at once, since it seems as if the steamer could only remain above water for a short time, went to 24 meters and ran towards the sea. Nor could I have fired a second torpedo into this swarm of people who were trying to save themselves.
Oh, I love this place. And here's a little wave. Let's see. Quick swim. One, two, three. Rise. Yes! Feet. And away we go. Down the line. Woo. Oh man, just been lifted up. And unceremoniously drafted.
Across the border now and into the Irish Republic, the town of Bundoran lies on the southwest corner of Donegal, and like Portrush, it's popular with surfers. But here, the recession has hit even harder. By 2010, the economy in the Republic had come close to collapse, the Celtic Tiger was truly kittened, and tens of thousands left for America and Australia. History seems to repeat itself. Owen Murphy travelled the world over only to find a little contentment right on his own doorstep as a surf instructor here on the Atlantic coast.
That's it, pull your knees through. Woo! Almost, so close.
We're into 4 minutes of additional time here at the end of this semi-final replay, in which Michael Duffy's goal has given Derry City a goal lead, and they are now within touching distance of reaching the FAI Cup final.
They absolutely totally deserve it, Eric. A far better side in the second half.
Here goes Dooley. Dooley can wrap it up. Patterson can! It's 2-0! Derry City most definitely will be in the FAI Cup final against St Patrick's Athletic. Rory Patterson adds a second goal in stoppage time to Duffy's a few moments ago, and he makes up for his penalty miss. It's Derry City 2, Shamrock Rovers 0. Roll on the FAI Cup final, and a repeat meeting with St Patrick's Athletic from the 2012 Cup decider.
Murrins agus Rathlin Island, Shin and Krupa Rahul Athru, a cur falcha rot
Arash hig agrin specialta na hi anot the Hasklar Lumsa Brian Mullen agus mudja creilu bha o chultarani chanan ag gahar gada agus Music City Day gafoil falan chol vi rach erin grupa sin athru le gurig na rwynshid an comertas kial an re nua le lindan elefan kelchach a vi insan chahar sha ami abran agus an verklar leishan grupa ta Conor Broderick. Conor, gormaigatas hatas ja?
Gormaigatas freshen.
Agus, ke ele tansan grupa shalat?
Well, ta Cormac ar an gitar, ta Kevin ar an baron, ta Drehar Cormac ar an fadog, agus Niall ar an fadog, big boss.
Oh, Niall and big boss. Okay, lorim e leishan marchin. Niall, gormaigatas Cormac.
Achros Lea is a lovely wee place. It's a services a big farming community traditionally. There are a lot of traditional crafts and traditional music and traditional people.
This is very much your place, Seamus, because we've had a quick tour of your house, and just to the back of your house is a beautiful green, very luscious looking field. But there have been Carolins in these parts for many a year, haven't
the
there?
Carolins have been here for about 400 years. We were originally Cavan people. We were the High Kings of Cavan, the Carolins.
I know, I'm yarning.
But we got involved in a bit of a battle sometime 400 or 500 years ago, and we got an awful beating. And half of us headed up into the foothills of Slieve Bay here, into the Rosslea area. And the other half went as far west as they could, and there were actually 15 Carolin families out in Belmullet. That's as far as they could get.
Get away.
Oh, we were good runners.
But your four grandparents were sort of only fields apart, is that right?
My four grandparents came from virtually four adjoining fields. And my daughter got married to a man from Minnesota. And another daughter got married to a man from Arizona. So, and then I have a son got married to a girl from Wales. So it's just in one generation it is...
Scattered a bit.
Scattered, yeah.
But I'm thinking now that maybe it's in the genes to a certain extent. I mean, this love of your place, this love of the landscape, but also maybe the yarning.
Well, you know, Anne-Marie, I often look at my grandchildren now and they're sitting playing games on the computers. And I ask myself, what was I doing at that time in the early 1950s in a farmhouse in out in Derry Hainlish? There was no electricity, no running water, no toilets, no facilities of any kind. And what we did, we simply sat in the house and listened to people coming in and telling yarns, and the crack was mighty.
There's no hard shoulders for us to pull in, you know. We would pull in if there was a hard shoulder. But if you're going to do grey steel, they would all that well done now. It's just two wee narrow tracks, and you can't get pulled on until you go way up near Tully Brislin, or if you're coming down the road towards Tully Very, you can pull in there for a while. But on other parts of the road, it's not our fault. We're going about our work, because you must remember that 90% of the traffic is passing through farmland on Northern Ireland. We're just going about our work.
That's fair enough, isn't it, Robert?
Aye, but could he not give it a wee bit more of a saddle? The tractor I was behind there a lot of weeks ago there was going about 10 miles an hour. And he was crawling up, and he had a black and white sheepdog in the back, hanging out of the back of her.
Robert, you know what you need? A little bit of patience. You know, wait your time, wait for a moment, and then you can move out and overtake when it's safe to do so. Do you ever try that?
When you've got a man sitting in the back, is in a hurry to go to the airport, and he's looking at your meter, and he's saying this meter's jumping up because you're going slower. It's hard to get through to a man like that.
I have an idea. Robert, why don't you go out for a day with Patrick and you sit up with the sheepdog and go out for a spin and see what it's like to take the tractor out in the road?
All I would say to Patrick, what speed does he go up the road at?
Patrick, answer that one.
We're going at 25 miles an hour.
Andrea!
Can't
stop.
Do you normally go on bicycles?
Just last week. We done our level 1 and 2 training.
What do you think of the night so far?
It's amazing.
It looks brilliant, doesn't it?
It looks absolutely magical.
And the rain doesn't bother you?
Not one bit.
And here we go. We're taking off again. We're going up Fannett Drive, up to Craigan Heights. Ross McGill is playing the part of the traffic cop. What do you think of it?
Oh, it's brilliant. It's excellent for Craigan to see the community out here tonight supporting him in the rain. So it is.
You know, part of the idea is for a lullaby to get children to go to bed? How come you're not in bed?
Because I want to watch the thing. I want to watch bicycles.
Ross McGill from SusTrans is cycling along. He's making sure everyone's safe. He reminds me of a sheepdog on a bicycle, herding all these cyclists into a pen.
We left her at 10:30 that night to go for a sleep, and at 7 o'clock that next morning, we got a phone call to say she took a turn for the worst. And when we went over, there was all the doctors around her. Her abdomen was slightly swollen at that time, and whenever they done an ultrasound of her belly, they noticed that there was a large clot blocking the liver for the blood supply to go through, and her abdomen just swole beyond appearance. Like, it was awful to watch it. And then we were taken into the room and we were sat down and we were talked to say that there was no other way, that we would have to turn off the machines on her, because there was no other help to give her, that they've tried everything that they could. So at that point, like, it was, I think it was numb. My partner was, he took it very bad. He collapsed, he needed oxygen and stuff and all. But I think it was hard to hear, but it was like a blur at the time to hear it.
It must be an awful experience to go through, because once you say yes, turn off the machine, you know your daughter's gone.
That's her away. Beautiful wee sofa that we had, that was her gone. There was no way back for her. And they think that she went to one of the best hospitals in the world, and that happened.
And were you with her when she slipped away?
I was. I held her. I held her until her heart stopped beating. And the transformation that her wee body underwent was awful. It wasn't like I had Sophie in my arms. It was like having someone else's baby in my arms. She was unrecognisable. It's just hard to believe that me and Stephen has went through what we went through. It's awful, like, that we had to go through it. But the way she died in my arms, I'll never forget it. Every time I close my eyes at night, that's all I see, is her wee face.
You know, it's non-denominational. If you're a Protestant, you know, and your son's taken his life, then this temple's for you. If you hate God and your son's taken his life, it's for you.
David Best believes there is power in burning things. Supported by Burning Man and partly crowdfunded, he was encouraged to construct a temple here in Ireland. And for weeks now, a small army of local and international volunteers has beavered away in near freezing weather up on Corrady Hill above Derry. To say the temple engaged local people would be an understatement.
My twin brother, our brother Jared, died 2 weeks ago. And Jared had an addiction of alcohol. And the stories that came through the house, the people that he helped get off alcohol over the last 20 years, the stories were amazing. They saved so many lives, but he couldn't save himself. Over-medicated and went to sleep and didn't wake up.
And the love that's been put into this building is second to none. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And we're so grateful, you know, that we can do this.
Do you think it helps healing?
It does. We have the cemetery, but this is, you know, we were able to come and
leave
wee messages for Jared, from personal messages. And it's just amazing. We go back now, we'll tell the rest of our family what we've done, and it's from all of us.
It's just incredible. From just the ground floor of the temple, suddenly a huge plume spread through the structure like an inferno. And even here at, 100 metres, my face is burnished. And the cold of the night in stark contrast to the heat of this magnificent ritual site. It feels like a ritual site here on one of Ireland's high places. I've never seen anything like it.